Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show, yes, I'm back. Brand new show for you. Originally aired on the Premiere Network Sunday, May 6th, 2018. This is episode 1486. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by 23andMe. Now through Mother's Day, get 20% off each 23andMe DNA kit plus free gift wrap. Go to 23andme.com/twit right now. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, you know. Yeah, it's that nerdy show on the radio. The computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, all that kind of reality. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number. I am live and in studio, so if you have a question about a technology subject, I'm here to help. 888-827-5536. It's not just me. All the rest of the people listening to this show are here to help. That's one of the nice things about this show is we've got a vast audience that can answer any question, however obscure. And not to mention a fabulous chat room sitting in the back there. They're kind of, I call them Team Tech Guy. They're there, they're sitting, they're waiting, they're hoping you'll ask something that they know the answer to so they can all chime in. And they will. They will. If you want to join the kids in the back of the class in the chat room there, it's irc.twit.tv. You could be part of the Team Tech Guy, ready to answer any question at all. Did you change your Twitter password? I did. I have a lot of Twitter accounts because over time, you know, I've set up accounts for my late labetted doggy. I guess I won't be using that one anymore. And I have my own, you know, main Twitter account, Leo Laporte, and then I have account for links that I put up on the website. It goes on and on and on. Lots of accounts. I think last I checked, a couple of dozen. And Twitter doesn't put a limit, so why not, right? You just need a separate email for each. That's easy enough. And then, of course, I created one for my kids. Do you do this? Because our wonderful engineer here at the studios, Patrick Delahanty, and his wife Svet had a baby, Caitlin. Baby boy Caitlin this week, just a couple of days ago. And, I was wondering, and I haven't seen Patrick since he had the baby. I probably won't see him for a while, and if I do, he'll be bleary. But I was wondering if he went out. First of all, I was wondering if when they chose the baby's name, they chose a name that they could get the URL for, the web domain for. Do you think they did that? Because Caitlin's kind of unusual and the spelling's a little unusual. I'm sure it's a family name, but it feels to me like maybe they kept looking. There used to be a website, allthegoodnamesaretaken.com, because, you know, we're in year, what is it, 20, let's see, the World Wide Web was created in 1989, so almost 30 years now. And in 30 years, you got to figure most of the good websites, certainly all the good .coms are taken. So that's my question. Nobody would do this except geeks. Nobody would do this but a geek. Choose a name. See, when my kids were born 26 and 23 years ago, the web was new, but it was, you know, it was around, but there wasn't. So I got their names as domain names. And when I registered it for 20 years because I figured, well, but if they don't want them by the time they're 20. They still didn't want them, but I re-registered them for another 10 or something. I gave them the clock still ticks. And just, it's funny, just the other day, Abby asked me for my, for her, said, can you connect the domain name to my website? I said, yes. Fine, I'm waiting for Henry, the younger one. He's only 23. So Caitlin, I wonder if Caitlin, if there's a, you know, CaitlinOutThere.com waiting for her, all ready to go. And then one of the other things I did, getting back to Twitter, is I created a Twitter handle for both the kids. That was a little later. That was 2006 Twitter started. But they have their Twitter handle in case. They never used those either. Ever. that's another part of the many Twitter accounts that I have to now change the password for. Twitter sent an email to everybody. You got it, I'm sure, if you have a Twitter account. If you're one of the 300 million. It's not a lot, really. I would, you know, it's really not even the majority of people in the United States, I think, who are Twitter users. Everybody knows about Twitter. They talk about it all the time. You can even vote for American Idol on Twitter. I mean, it's not, certainly not a, you know, geek-only site, although sometimes it feels like it is. Anyway, yeah, little mistake. They, you know, they're very proud, as any good geeky site should be, and you should always look for this. They say, we store all your personal information, particularly your password, encrypted. And sometimes you want to see this too, if they even hash them with salt. Don't ask. It's just what they do. They encrypt them and they hash them with salt, which is good for the breakfast. It sounds, I'll have some hash with salt. And not, you don't have to encrypt it. Except that in the... And so there's always a little, you know, loophole, except that in the process of encrypting and hashing them with salt, they also made a log of all of them in plain text. Unencrypted, unhashed, no salt, just sitting out there. You know, it was on the Twitter servers, but it was sitting there. It's been who knows for how long. When they discovered it, they did the right thing. And I don't want to rag on Twitter because they did the right thing. And I don't want to discourage companies from doing this themselves. This is the right thing to do. They sent out an email to everybody saying, change your password. We don't see any evidence that a log is a text file stored on a server. We don't see any evidence that this log was, you know, anybody had access to it outside the company. What they don't say is that everybody inside the company probably has already downloaded it, put it on a USB key. Perhaps even many people who don't work there anymore. So, you know, I mean, it's out there. That's why they were right to say, hey, whoops, whoops. They didn't start the email with whoops, but they should have. Whoops. So you want to change your Twitter handle. Now, I did not panic when I read this email. I did not freak out. I did, in fact, even rush to Twitter and change the password because I do something that I encourage you all to do, and I want you to keep doing it, which is... I use two-factor authentication. Come on, Leo. You tell us about this every week. I know, but I want to just reiterate. This is why there's two things in password hygiene you got to do. One, two-factor authentication. That means the password's not enough, that the first time you log into Twitter on a new device, your phone, your computer, your tablet, it'll say, okay, we've never seen you before. Just in case you're stealing Leo's password, we're going to send you a code or use your authenticator. That's better even than text. And that six-digit code, you need to have that as well. And that keeps bad guys, even if they get your password, even if somebody has that spreadsheet, that log with every 300 million passwords on it, and the ones that are protected by two-factor, it's no good. Still should change it. But at least you don't have to freak out, right? So that's why you want to use two-factor. But there's another problem, unfortunately. There always is another problem. Passwords are such a terrible solution. They're just a terrible idea. And people don't like the idea that they have to remember a new password for every website. So they use the same password. I know, everybody I know, I ask my kids, my wife, everybody I know, they use the same variation. Oh, I changed it by Ursula. And that means that it's possible that your Twitter password is the same password as for other accounts, right? If that's the case, this is why you got to use a password manager. Now you kind of have a lot of work to do. Because that password, you used it on other sites, even if you have two-factor, even if you're smart, you say, Leo, I don't have to worry, I got two-factor on my Twitter account. That's great. Do you have two-factor on all those accounts? Because guess what? That password is now out there. So don't reuse passwords. That's the message of the day. Use a password manager And don't, that's a thing that will create good, strong passwords. And then, you don't have to remember it. So you can make a new one for every site. And it could be like 30. I use 25, 30 characters and punctuation in upper and lowercase. No one would ever be able to brute force it or guess it. And I don't have to worry about it. Because even if somebody, as they did, apparently, leaked my my Twitter password, or at least kept it stored in a text file, probably was named passwords, right, on the somebody's on Jack's hard drive, Jack Dorsey's hard drive. He's, oh yeah, I got this file here called passwords. What is that? Well, Jack, that's 300 million users and their passwords in plain text. Oh, that's nice. That's handy. You might want to change your password, even if. All right, 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Kim Schaffer's here. She's answering the call. She's getting them on the air. I see the phones lighting up. Play the music, boys, because it's time to take a break. When we come back, I'll see if this jet-lagged brain is ready to answer your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I like that bass line. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here's Kim Schaffer answering the phones. Hi, Kim.
Welcome back.
You get a vacation when I get a vacation, right?
I got about half the vacation you got.
Okay. Hey, half's better than nothing. Because yes. Rich, thank you to Rich DeMuro from KTLA who filled in for me last weekend.
Yeah.
That was nice. So you had to work for him.
Work with him.
With him.
For him.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a partnership deal.
No, it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everything went well. Everything, I noticed that nothing's missing. I counted the spoons. They're all still here.
Good.
So that's good. So, no, Rich is a great guy. No, and I appreciate him filling in.
I think he has a lot of fun with it, too. So,
you know, people think this is working for a living.
Well, he does say you make it look very easy, which is true, but
it's fun.
I think he has a little fun with
if
it.
You
too,
if you do it every week, it's not hard work.
Yeah.
You get used to it. I think if you do it once, like Rich does it maybe once a year when I'm on vacation, once or twice a year, that makes it a little harder. So anyway, he did a great job.
He's like,
thank
there's
you,
so
Rich.
Many screens and so many buttons.
I know. I'm a little.
He's like, he's controlling all of this by himself. Doesn't he have people?
Where's my people? Well, he works at TV. He's used to 40
used
people,
to people
pushing his buttons and
doing his makeup.
His makeup and all that stuff. And here you are. We're not fancy.
Yeah.
But I am a little. I'm what you call ADD, addled. And as a result, I need to keep at my attention. I have to have things going on. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 screens in front of me.
Yeah, I'm very used to that as well. I could count the ones in here, but I won't.
I'm not making that up. That's just the ones I can see.
Yeah.
Actually, two more, 14, 15, I just realized. So, I like to, it's a little jangly in here, but you know, he works in TV. He's used to that. They got bright lights and people talking in your ear and stuff like that. Yeah, he's
IFBs
used to that. So, did anything happen while I was gone?
Here or the rest of the country?
In the world? It's funny, we were in Japan, which was, by the way, if you ever get a chance. Have you been?
I've not. The only time I've even been over the pond was my Ireland trip. So
that's right.
I'm not yet a world traveler.
Japan is an amazing country. Simultaneously ancient and it's like you're living in the past and the future.
Right, because they're very technologically advanced.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But and then in weird ways, not. For instance, and I wish somebody had told me this before we went. I think this is really good. But there are no paper towels in most of the men's rooms.
Because they have the dryers, right?
No dryers either.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes dryers,
so
sometimes paper towels. You wipe it on your pants. And it turns out, and they must have, I figure at some point they had some public relations campaign and songs on the children's shows saying, bring your hanky when you go to the bathroom, bring your hanky with you, because everybody carries their own little pocket towel. And you're just expected. And it makes sense because there's no waste, right? You don't have all that paper towel waste.
Right.
There's no trash cans on the sidewalks either. You're expected to either, you know, dispose of whatever wrappings you had. And they do love to wrap things right there and then, or put it in your pocket and take it home with you.
But probably also no litter all
zero
over the
litter,
place either.
Very clean. Zero litter, zero graffiti. Everything's clean. It's very interesting. Anyway, just a tip. If you ever go to Japan,
bring a hanky.
Bring a pocket towel, a little hanky. When I got home.
And a bag for your garbage.
And yes. Well, so when you buy, like they have vending machines everywhere with excellent coffee, by the way. So I would buy coffee. But you're expected to drink it there and dispose of it there. And if you don't, then, well, your job is to carry it with you for the rest of the day until you get to a trash can because there are no public trash cans.
Interesting.
Anyway, just a couple of travel tips from Leah Laporte, the tech guy. And I don't even want to know. I haven't checked what time it is. But I think I'm not awake yet. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't actually know how you must be a glutton for punishment.
I got in yesterday. Yeah.
I know. You do this all the time. I don't know how you adjust so
mind.
Quickly.
Sleep is overrated. We'll sleep when we're dead. So you've been answering the phones. Has anybody called or did...
Well, I'm carrying this one over from last week because Rich didn't want to answer it.
Wow. Thanks for giving me a nice, easy call to start with. What?
Chip in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. It sounds like he's got a failed hard drive and he's trying to figure out how to fix it, but kind of cost effective, not because he's seen the really expensive sites. I don't know. You might want to throw it back, too.
Did YouTube die while I was gone? The chat room's telling me YouTube died when I was gone. I'll have to find out about that.
Our YouTube or YouTube in general?
In general. I don't know. Let's say hi to Chip in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Hello,
hi,
Chip.
Leo.
Hey, welcome.
All right.
Thanks for hanging on for a week. You've been on hold for a week, huh?
Yeah, I guess Rich didn't want to answer this question again.
I'll answer it. I'll take any question you can fire at me. I may not give you the right answer, but I'll do my best.
Okay. So another caller called about a failed hard drive, and they went to a repairman, and the repairman wanted them to buy the parts so they could fix it. Rich said, no, send it to an expert, ship it away. That's going to cost me, I checked it out, that's going to cost me like $399 or $400 and up to
$1,500. I can get your bill higher than that. That's nothing. So let me talk about what a hard drive dying means, because it can mean a lot of different things. If it's a hardware failure, but do you know for a fact it's a hardware failure?
Well, first it didn't recognize it. I took it to
doesn't mean anything. So let me start over. Hold on a sec. You know, a hard drive not being visible doesn't necessarily mean there's physically something wrong with it. It can be a software failure. It could be a hardware failure. Software failures are generally easy to fix and inexpensive. Hardware failures are always expensive. So the guy you brought it to Rich was right. The guy you brought it to says, well, if you were to get me some parts, I could fix this. Well, I don't know if that's the best idea. Generally, if you go to somebody like Drive Savers, okay, they're the best known brand in this. Thousands of dollars, because what they're going to do is put you in a clean room, put your drive in a clean room. They'll leave you out of it. They'll put the drive in a clean room. They're wearing bunny suits. They have all the parts. They disassemble it very, very carefully, replace whatever needs to be fixed, even if that's a head or a platter, and then try to recover the data. That's thousands of dollars. That's why it's always easier and cheaper to back up first. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So that's the, because I only had 30 seconds, that's the quick answer. But tell me more about your problem.
Okay. I bought a home after the Staples couldn't fix it, so it started smoking. So I said, oops.
Smoking is definitely a physical failure. Yeah. Smoke's coming out of it. And now let me ask you this. Is the data on the drive like I got to have this data?
Yeah, it's semi-important because it's all my financials from 5 years plus.
So this is why everybody else who's listening besides you, this is why you back up. Because drives die. Sometimes they even burn up. A smoking drive. Go ahead.
Could you lay out how much it's going to cost me with carbonite and everything? Because that's what was preventing me from backing up, because it was like a wild card. I have to buy this part on top of this part, you know, two drives plus carbonite. If I knew a final number, at least I could work with it.
Well, you can go to carbonite.com and look, and they have pricing on the website. But really, so I can tell you, I can't give you a final number, but I could tell you that all that data on there is going to cost you if you really want to get it back, and you may not even be able to, depending on what that smoke means, probably upwards of $3,000 or $4,000 to get back.
Oh. Not, see, I was watching on YouTube. That's what I was.
No. Well, yeah, no. Because the deal is, it's smoking. Probably that means there's a couple possibilities. There's a cheap possibility that circuit board that's on the top of the drive, that a part smoked on that. If that's your best case scenario, because that circuit board can cheaply be replaced. It has to be identical to the original, and then everything will work fine. That's the best case scenario. That shouldn't cost you more than a couple $100. Worst case scenario is the bearings are smoking, that the bearings fried inside the drive, or there was a fire inside the drive, in which case, if it's the bearings, that's the next best case scenario, because then you take it to Drive Saver. Somebody really in a clean room that's going to disassemble it, the whole thing, put the platters in a new identical, again, it has to be identical enclosure, reassemble it, and you have to do that in a clean room because even one tiny speck of dust will cause data loss. Reassemble it, and then when you can imagine, this is thousands of dollars. But Drive Savers can't even quote you that amount until they know what's wrong. So you can call them up and ask them. The worst case scenario is there was a fire inside. The bearings, you know, got so hot there's no oxygen in these things. But let's say there's a fire inside, and then your data's gone. No amount of money will get it back. So there's the scenario. Backup could be really cheap. If that's what's stopping you, go to Costco and buy an expensive external hard drive that's roughly the same size as your internal hard drive and make a copy of your data. That's all backup is, making a copy of your data. You could do that for under $100 one time out. Offsite backup, which Carbonite does, is a whole nother thing. If you'd even had a local drive backup, you'd be better off now. I'm not saying you have to spend $1,000 on Carbonite, or it's not that expensive, but, you know, I don't know. It depends on what you want to back up. If you're just backing up the contents of one computer, I think it's, what was it? It's $60 a year. But if you have external drives, if you have more than one computer on, you can go up. But first thing to do is do a local backup. That's cheap.
I had done that, but then there was the syncing that I was losing files when I updated, and it was synced back with the old files. It was driving me crazy, so I kind of took a risk and not backed up this time. So I had it on the external drive. So I didn't put that much information on the external drive. That's what I couldn't understand, why it all of a sudden just crashed on me.
Because hard drives die. I'm sorry, I got to run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, shaking it up, 8888 Ask Leo, website techguylabs.com. Somebody said I don't know if this is true, were you joking? Archandra says there's a company called $300datarecovery.com. All right, so you know, I had a little fun talking to Chip and Cherry Hill. I feel bad for Chip. But let me kind of lay it out here. First of all, you got to back up your data, or you're the next Chip and Cherry Hill. If you don't back up your hard drives, die. They all do. If you look at the studies of, you know, companies like Backblaze and Google that use a lot of hard drives, generally, I'll generalize, hard drives, you know, if they don't die in the first few months, there's always a certain amount of infant mortality in all computer gear. But some small percentage will die right away. Okay, good. It's worked. It's been working for 6 months. Starting in year two and every year thereafter, about 8% of all hard drives die every year. So, you know, just do the math. In 5 years, your chance of that hard drive dying is more than 50%. So you're going to lose it. It's going to die. Maybe you have that miracle hard drive that's 10 years old. It's even more likely to die. You got to back it up. You can't trust. It's not even hard drives. Let's put it a different way. If you have one copy of anything, it's vulnerable. All a backup is making another copy. And ideally, you're making three copies. That way, and Chip, by the way, was making a backup. He had an external drive. He was doing syncing. He was syncing the two files. I talked to him off the air. Syncing the two drives, the internal and the external. But the syncing stuff didn't work. Syncing is always a problem, right? So the stuff, the data got deleted. So he turned it off. So he no longer has a backup. He has one copy. One copy of anything you're running. I don't care if it's stored on a solid gold disk and stored in a data warehouse or a bank safety of bank vault. It's one copy is vulnerable. Two copies, you're much better off. Three copies, you're almost certainly not going to lose data. And ideally, one of those three copies is somewhere other than where your computer is, in case there's like a fire and the house burns down and then your backups go with your computer, then you'd have a third copy somewhere else. Bank vault's fine. I don't care where you, but bank vault's not great because it's a little hard to access. You want to keep that third copy up to date, right? A lot of people use cloud services like our sponsor Carbonite for that because that's kind of always kept up to date. It's off-site. But you know what? You can mail disks to mom. I know people who have, I used to do this for a long time. I did this. I'd have two separate external hard drives. I'd synchronize my local internal hard drive to my external drive constantly. And once a week on Monday, I'd bring that external hard drive to work because I'd have two of them, and I'd take the one from work back home, synchronize to that. Now, think about that. What does that mean? Well, that means if there's a fire or some disaster at my house and I lose the local hard drive and my internal hard drive, I still have a hard drive at work, which is no more than 1 week out of date. It could be as much as a week out of date because I was swapping it every week. But that's better than having to spend $5,000 at Drive Savers because the hard drive started. He told me off the air, he said, I think it is a physical failure because the hard drive was smoking. yeah, that's probably a physical failure. It's probably fairly catastrophic. Hard drives can fail in so many different ways, though. He wanted a price for backup and I presume a price for recovery. You can't say how much it's going to cost to backup and you can't say how much it's going to cost to restore because it just depends. His best case scenario is that the circuit board, if you take a hard drive out or look at a hard drive, depends again on the hard drive. These are the old style hard drives that, the 5 1/4 inch big ones or even the 2 1/2 inch. They have a circuit board, a green PC board on the top of them. That's the circuitry that controls the drive. That could have smoked. And if that's what smoked, that's not a big deal because if you can get one that's identical to that, you could just unscrew it, put the new one on, connect it up, and it'll work fine again. And so maybe that's what the guy was telling him at Staples where he brought it in. You just get me that circuit board. Now, good luck finding that exact – it has to be that exact model. That's why a company like Drive Savers, one of the things that they do is they buy every kind of drive. When a new drive comes out, they buy like five of them. So they have all the parts. They have the exact – and if there's a new Rev B, they buy that one. So they have all the parts. So then when you bring that drive in, they can unscrew the old circuit board, put the new one on. And they could tell if it's smoked, they look at it. Or, they probably have sophisticated searching diagnostic tools and they plug it in. They could tell it's smoked and they say, oh, we just replaced that. But smoking could also mean there's something inside. There was a fire inside the hard drive. I don't know what. There's no oxygen in it, but maybe, I don't know, there was a fire inside the hard drive or the bearing smoked. The hard drive's spinning around at minimum 5,000 RPM. Faster hard drives even more. Bearings in there, they could freeze up or smoke or burn or whatever. If that's the case, well, then they have to take it all apart, take the platters out. That's where the data is. Put it in a new drive with good bearings, exact same drive, right? Same circuit board. Screw it all together. And by the way, you can't do that in your garage. You have to do that in a clean room environment, and you're wearing bunny suits. This costs a lot of money. Don't get in that situation. Make good backups. That's the answer to all of this. Make good backups, and you won't have to worry. You know, there are if you care about your data, spend a little energy. It's not money, really. He was worried about the cost of backup. It's not money. It's time. It's thought. Thinking about it. It's getting, you know, getting a sync tool that actually works, stuff like that. And then periodically verifying that your backups are good, they're working, everything. You got to check that regularly. You can't put it on automatic. You want to know what I do? I'll tell you what I do. And I have multi-level solutions. But I got a network attached storage device. This is going to cost you. Now this is the high price spread. Network attached storage device is just a big old hard drive that's on your network. It automatically backs up everything. When I sign on with a new computer, one of the reasons I do this, I always am trying new computers. I log into that device and I put the software on that device provides, and automatically my documents folder is replicated now to the new computer. So every computer I have has the same documents folder. One file changes on any one of those computers, it's backed up to the network attached storage in my closet. And then copied over to everything else. So that documents folder is synchronized perfectly at all times. And I don't have 1, 2, 3 copies. I probably have a dozen copies of everything in that documents folder. And I periodically test it and it works and all of that. So that's the best way to protect your data. You might want to then have an offsite solution as well. I mean, in a way I do, right? Because I have computers here that have the same data, computers at home that have the same data. But most network attached storage devices will then back up to an offsite cloud if you subscribe. In all cases, these are subscriptions. There are a lot of companies that do it, like our sponsor Carbonite, but that's one of many. It'll back it up to the servers in the cloud. Now you have another copy. You have copies on your computers, you have copies at home, and you have copies in the cloud. And the big concern there really isn't cost. For a lot of people, it's privacy. The idea that, well, that's my financial records, as Chip was saying. This is my financial record. I don't want anybody to see that. Well, that's why you have to then learn about encryption and making sure the data is private and encrypted, and a good network-attached storage solution will do all that too. So that's another way to go. Cheapest way to go out and get a USB thumb drive or a USB external drive and copy the data over and get a good synchronization tool. I like Second Copy from Centered Systems. It will do this safely and reliably. As long as that external drive is plugged in, it'll make a second copy of that data right over to that external drive. On Mac, Carbon Copy Cloner or Super Duper, Second Copies for Windows. Those solutions are inexpensive and will keep you always up to date. At the very least, do that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I feel bad because I know this is not a when I say all that, normal people go, oh, well, yeah. They don't know what I was saying. I don't want anything. Thank you. They don't know what the heck I was, you know, they go, oh, what, huh? And they don't do it. And then their Chip is by far the majority. Then poor Chip sitting there with a smoked hard drive. It's hard drives. 8888, Ask Leo. Ryan Hein. April shot down in May. Yep. 8888, Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk high tech. Let's go back to the phones. Next on the line here. I forgot how these phones work. I press this button, and then Dr. Mom appears. Wow. It's a miracle. Hi, Dr. Mom.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm good. Lillian from Long Island.
As usual, I'm calling. While you were gone, they added a new ability to the Amazon Home Assistant. Have you heard about Blueprints?
No. What's Blueprints?
Okay. Go to blueprints.amazon.com.
I have this. Just on the name, I'm nervous about this.
No, you should not be.
What's Blueprints of my house? What is the Echo doing?
It's letting you develop your own individual skills for the Amazon Smart Home Assistant.
I was wondering when they were going to do this because that one of the advantages, you know, if you know how to program, you can write your own skills. You could do all sorts of things. So they're saying create a personal Echo in minutes. Oh, that's neat. Right. Have you done this yet?
I've tried it on a couple of them. I will tell you, the ones that looked most interesting to me were, if you scroll down the list, you see where it says house guest and then pet sitter?
Yeah.
Which are way, and then there's babysitter.
Yeah. I need this one.
Program, Right. You program in, you say, okay, Echo, open up the babysitter. And then you can ask it, like, where are the diapers? What's the pediatrician's phone number? I will tell you, though, the only issue I have with it right now, most people aren't smart enough or not savvy enough using it to know that it's there.
You have to put a post-it note on the Echo that says, hey, good buddy, staying in my house, try this. And you say, Echo, open my house guest guide, which is what they call it. And then it'll say, oh, hi, this is house guest guide. You want to know how to turn on the TV? Here's how. That kind of thing. That's a neat idea.
The thing is, especially for the babysitter or the pet sitter, you can say, babysitter, what's the number for the pediatrician? Well, if I have to write all those instructions on a post-it note, I'm going to write them down on a whole sheet of paper for the babysitter anyway.
I'm going to do, I think for Mother's Day, by the way, happy Mother's Day, Dr. Mom.
Alexa, open my mom's story.
And this is what happens.
Happy Mother's Day. Jack and Olivia created this story, which is all about their mom, Sarah. Sarah was born in Washington a really long time ago. Growing up, she loved to play soccer. These days, Sarah's favorite things to do are play tennis and spend time with her family.
Does this seem a little creepy to you?
It seems very creepy. I think if time comes on and you're able to link it up to more like smart home devices and stuff, to more customize your home, it's a great idea. Right now, they said, well, what are some common things we can easily get people to do? Because it's questions and answers.
Yeah, that's the problem. In fact, in general, and I've played with Amazon Skills, Echo Skills, writing skills and stuff. You have to, in fact, they even say this, they have a pretty extensive guide for developers. You have to really think in terms of a whole new user interface, listening, questions and answers. And it is kind of constrained. It's more limited than you'd expect. So you have to think that way. But I think Amazon's really on the right track here, making this customizable. It just needs to be a little less robotic, a little easier to figure out.
I think it's a great idea. I think as they expand the number of blueprints that are out there, it's going to be a little bit more usable. Right now they came up with, gee, these sound like a great idea. Let's say something for Mother's Day. Let's write a fairy tale or family trivia.
I like that idea that I could because my mom has many Echoes. Uh-oh.
No, that was my daughter calling.
Da, da, da. That was Cherokee Nation? What is that? Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Witchy woman.
Witchy woman. Okay.
My daughter one of these days.
Don't tell your daughter that her ringtone is Witchy Woman. She will not be happy.
Oh, she knows it. She thinks it's hysterical.
My ex-wife, and now she's my ex, so maybe this is why I got very angry. Because I had the chicken dance as her ringtone.
Oh, my God.
She didn't like that.
I can just imagine.
We're still on good terms, thank goodness. Hey, Dr. Mom, it's great to hear from you. Dr. Mom is rapidly becoming our Amazon Echo expert. We have Mike B. in Jersey. He's my TiVo expert. Will you be my Amazon Echo expert, Dr. Mom?
And I'd be happy to. The next one I want them to please come out with is an outdoor-rated waterproof one.
Oh, I know. Sonos never came out with an outdoor Sonos speaker, which I could never understand why they didn't do that.
No, the closest thing I do right now is I have one of those Vox speakers for the Dot, you know, V-A-U-X. I mentioned it a while ago.
Yeah.
And drop it in, take it outside. We're sitting outside, and then I have to remember to bring it in.
Yeah. Dr. Mom lives in Long Island, where everybody spends a lot of time outside during the summer. Dr. Mom, great to talk to you.
And indoors shoveling the snow.
And indoors during the winter, yes. Happy next week's Mother's Day. Happy. You got plans for Mother's Day? Is a witchy woman doing anything for you? Not now.
Well, actually, I'm going out to visit my daughter.
Nice.
And we're going to go out with her and her mother-in-law, and we're going to have a three-way Mother's Day.
Aww.
She's sitting there gestating. It's so funny. Right now, she's like, I feel pregnant. I'm going, you're 34 weeks pregnant.
Oh, she should feel pregnant. Oh, congratulations. So this is your second grandchild?
First one.
First. Congratulations, Dr. Grandmom.
I have all the technology set up. The baby's going to get an Echo in their room immediately.
Oh, nice. Now, to answer my question from the beginning of the show, are they going to name the baby based on what websites are available?
No, because we already have my last name. I already secured that domain a couple of years ago.
Oh, good.
So we can just give him, actually, we know it's a boy. We can just give him a name on that website.
That's a good one. Keep the last name and then just add, you know, Herman@Lillian.com, that kind of thing. That's a good idea.
Exactly.
That's a good idea. I should have done that, but Laporte.com was taken even by then. I do have LeoLaporte.com, but nobody, my daughter doesn't want to be Abby@LeoLaporte.com. How insulting could that be?
Well, I don't want to say what my last name is because we're the only family of this in the United States.
I have not said you notice I'm very careful about that.
But I'm just saying it's really easy. His name is going to be Cameron, so it'll be Cam at.
Oh, nice. That's really good. At least he's got an email. Yeah, that's a good idea. And, you know, somebody was suggesting that there's always a better parent than you. But somebody was suggesting you set up a Gmail account for the newborn. And then every, you know, year at the birthday or whatever, you send her an email talking about her and, you know, how the year was. And then when she's 21, you give her the keys to the account and say, check the inbox. There might
be. But are you sure you want them to see what you wrote about them when they were teenagers?
No, maybe not. Thank you, Dr. Mom. Great to talk to you. Well, I survived the first hour. It's probably like 3 a.m. Tokyo time, Mom. But I feel good, and I'm ready to take your calls. We'll get more calls in this next hour. 8888 Ask Leo. And don't forget, every time I talk about something, we put links up and all the information at the website. It's techguylabs.com. No charge. You don't have to sign up. It's free. Techguylabs.com. So as you're driving around today, don't worry. You don't have to write anything down. You don't have to yell at the radio. You can leave your comments there, too. It's all free. Techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Ah, yes. Rocket Mortgage. It's that time. Maybe you want to refi. Interest rates probably going up. Or maybe you're interested in buying a house. Maybe you're out right now looking at open houses. Can I make a recommendation? Don't go to the old bank to get that loan for the new home. Don't. That's just the old way of doing it. That's straight out of Charles Dickens. Please, sir, can I have some money? Got to go hat and put on a tie or a nice dress and go in and say, I'd like to borrow money, please. And they look down their noses at you, and then they give you a giant application, and you got to find all this information. You got to call other banks and other credit card. Your previous employers get all the paperwork and then fax it to them because apparently they don't understand the modern technology. It's just crazy. Instead, use Rocket Mortgage. From Quicken Loans, best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running, according to J.D. Power. Also, the company that is so technologically sophisticated that they've created this Rocket Mortgage solution for those of us who just don't want to go to a bank. We don't want to go up to the attic and find paperwork. We just want to get the loan. Rocket Mortgage is an entirely online mortgage approval process. You do it. It's so easy. It's so fast. You could do it on your phone at an open house. That's how easy it is. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Answer a few, you know, simple questions. Just actually do that right now. Sign up for the account. And that way, when you're at an open house and you say, oh, well, let's see if we can get a loan for this, then you finish the process, which takes minutes. They will, based on your income, your assets, and your credit, and you don't have to go find paperwork because they have relationships with all the financial institutions. Once you give them permission, they can get all the information they need, crunch the numbers, do that in minutes, come back to you with all the loans for which you qualify. You choose the down payment, the term, the rate. They give you the loan. You're approved. It's that simple, that fast, in under 10 minutes. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You apply simply, you understand fully, and you'll mortgage confidently with Rocket Mortgage. Go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Bookmark that, or better yet, create the account now so you'll be ready when the time comes. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the easy online way to apply for a mortgage or a refi, if it's time to refi. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. Augmented reality, 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Outside that area, you can still call. Just use Skype out to call us. The website, as I mentioned, techguylabs.com. That's free. Everything we talk about on the show is linked there. James DeRuvo's writing. Scribble, scribble, scribble. He will put everything I say up there, but will also then after the fact put audio and video from the shows, and your comments are welcome too. So the idea is that that website will get better and better over time, more and more information. There's a very good search tool on it, so you can find anything you want. TechGuyLabs.com. Tech Guy camera guru Chris Marquardt coming up in about half an hour. But before that, I have time for many calls, I hope. Let's start with Scott in Orange County. Thanks for hanging on, Scott. Leo Laporte.
Leo, how's it going?
Doing great. How are you?
Excellent.
What's good?
So we're already into May.
Yes.
You know, and my wallet's burning a hole. It wants to spend money on technology.
if there's something, oh, you got a tax refund or something, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's just fine. And is there anything fun coming out this summer or the fall that I should wait for? That's gonna be like, I got my Apple AirPods last September, and that was a game.
That was a good gift. Good gift to yourself. Well, you know, Apple does actually. There are a number of events coming up in the next couple of months that may reveal cool things. Apple has its big developers conference in June, WWDC, and we expect Apple will announce at least new laptops. Apple's, of course, making money faster than the U.S. Mint. They had a very, very good quarter. But if you look at the numbers, I think it's safe to say that people were not impressed with Apple's latest round of MacBooks. So I think that I'd be very interested what Apple does with the MacBooks this summer, whether they respond to that. So that's one thing to pay attention to. Google I.O. is this week. Google has its developer conference and Microsoft has its developer conference roughly the same time this coming week. At Google I.O., Google always announces something new. We'll probably hear about new phones, maybe other new devices. And, you know, I expect Google will respond to Amazon. We were talking last hour with Dr. Mom about that blueprint feature that Amazon added to Echo. Well, you know, Echo, Amazon with its Echo and Google with its Home Assistant are in deep and vicious battles. And I suspect they will respond with something equally interesting. That, to me, that's a very interesting advance in terms of voice assistance, the ability to get it to do things you want it to do, program it even, without any programming skills. I think that'll be very that'll be an interesting battlefield for those two companies. So look for something interesting from Google. Let me think if there's any categories. I mean, we're seeing a lot of really nicely – you sound like you're an Apple guy, and so that's why I mentioned the MacBooks. We're seeing a lot of really nice Windows laptops and some really good innovation from the Windows manufacturers, Window PC manufacturers. The little computers, too, like the Raspberry Pi, there's a number of companies putting out small, sub-$100 computers that are very interesting. I think there's going to be some new stuff this summer from them. Facebook had its big developers conference last week. I didn't see anything I got excited about from Facebook at all. You know, but mostly just new ways to mine your information and make money off of it. Augmented reality is still a ways off. That's going to be, to me, there are two technologies that are changing the world and will be very important in this decade, the remainder of this decade and the beginning of the next. One is voice assistance. We talked a little bit about that. Those are slowly but gradually getting better. And then the other, which I think is going to be important, is augmented reality. I don't think virtual reality, the idea of putting on visors that you look around in and you're kind of isolated from the world. I think that's a specialty product for gamers and content consumers. But augmented reality, the idea of, and it doesn't have to be glasses, by the way, but the idea of wearing something that is a new interface to computing. Notice both of these, voice assistants and augmented reality, are about new interfaces, a new way of putting computers into your life. Augmented reality, generally people think of it in terms of glasses that you look through, that you see the world, but then superimposed on the world is more information. Microsoft's working really hard on that with HoloLens, but I think other companies, and I expect Microsoft will talk a little bit about that this week. They call it mixed reality now.
Mixed reality.
Yeah, that's the new term. I think that's probably a better term. It's just that only Microsoft uses it. How about TVs? Will we see anything new in TVs this summer? Probably not, although these 4K high dynamic range TVs are pretty darn good. If you're interested in a TV, this might be the summer to get a new HDR, UHD TV.
I just at Costco, and they had a 70-inch Vizio for $700.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, it's really amazing. The prices have tumbled. They're almost back down to what TVs used to cost.
Right.
But they won't. But the bad news is your old Sony Trinitron, that you might keep that for 10 years. You probably won't keep this flat screen for more than 3 or 4 as technology changes. What else? I don't know. What other categories? That's a good question for the listening audience. Maybe they can call in with some suggestions. Let's help Scott spend his money. Cool stuff could Scott buy this summer?
You remember when, like, Apple would throw surprises out? Like, yeah, no idea, the iPod or whatever. It just seems like there's nothing that pops out. You're like, wow, where'd that come from?
I think that's because we're at a mature point in technology. You get these plateaus every 10 years or so where everything new has been kind of matured and refined. Look at the phone. There's not much you can do to a smartphone anymore to make anybody jump up and say, wow. Just incremental improvements. So we're waiting for the next big thing to come along. And you're right, Apple, I wouldn't look to Apple anymore, frankly, for those kinds of innovations. They'll come from somebody else. I don't even know if Google or Microsoft or Facebook even. I think the big tech giants are very happy to make money hand over fist doing what they already do. It's going to be some young upstart. Unfortunately, if you look at the startup world, it's full of gee-jaws and gimcracks and shiny objects that have no real long-term use. And nothing that I look at and go, wow, that's going to change the world. So you're right. We're kind of in a slow period for a little bit, I think. That's a good question. Let me keep thinking about it, Scott. See if I can come up with anything. I think new computer interfaces are really where the work needs to be done. What's the trend that we're talking about in technology these days is the move of intelligence from a central device on your desk to the periphery, to everything. Everything's getting more intelligent, right? And by the way, I don't buy this whole artificial intelligence thing. That is at this point still just a marketing term, in my opinion. We're not, we're years before. At least 5 years before you start seeing AI really be AI. Right now, it's just, it's a computer program. Doing what computer programs have always done, right? It's nothing different. It's not thinking. Now, these machines aren't thinking. But I do think we'll see new ways of using these machines and putting intelligence, the old-style computer intelligence, in a lot more things, not just refrigerators and microwave ovens, but in cars, in everything, and that's very interesting to me. Everything's getting a little more intelligent. That's the Internet of Things, right? All of these devices in your home, like the voice assistants. And I think then they call for new ways of interfacing with them. If you had an Amazon Echo and you had to have a keyboard and a screen, it'd be a computer. But the idea that you could talk to it and it can respond to you, that limits what it can do, but it gives it some interesting new capabilities as well. Same thing with augmented reality, the idea of putting in some headphones like those Apple AirPods or some glasses perhaps. I don't know, maybe new shoes that give you more information about the world around you, that add computing to your auditory or visual experience. That's interesting. I think that'll happen, but not this summer. We're a few years off. 8888 Ask Leo. Maybe you've got some ideas. I'd love to hear from you. What is the big thing this summer Scott's can spend his money on? That's what I'd like to know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Go back to the phones just a bit. Answer more of your calls. What are you excited about? What do you want to buy this summer? What technology is exciting to you? 8888 Ask Leo. Yeah, I never did use the translator. I brought the Bing translator, which was very nice. And of course, I had the Google translator. Never did use it. You know, it just was easier to do hand gestures, and people understand enough English, and not a lot, but enough. And we were able to get things done pretty well, I think, without a lot of difficulty. I did a photosphere. Let me see if I can find that 360-degree photosphere. We went to the Adachi Museum, which is kind of off the beaten path, but it has what many consider to be the finest Japanese garden in Japan. You're not allowed outside. There's nobody there. You could just look at it from a distance. But it was and it was rainy that day. But it's just a gorgeous garden. And they bought the surrounding countryside so that nobody could put a cell tower on this hill back here or anything like that, so that it would stay pristine, which is really cool. So I thought I should do a photosphere of this. I'll post these when I get around to it. You see, here we're standing on behind the bamboo barrier, so that. But just gorgeous. I love these very serene Japanese gardens. It was kind of fun to be there during the rain too. You can't see them, but there's like little waterfalls in the distance. Everything in the sight line is completely planned for, there's a waterfall here, including the hillside behind the property. They include that as well in the design of the garden. Yeah, we, loquacious, we went to one Japanese garden area where it was old samurai houses, and you could walk into those. And those were gorgeous, but nothing as elaborate as the Adachi Museum. I was glad, though, we were able to go to see the countryside as well as the big cities. We started in Osaka, ended in Tokyo. Here's Lisa in one of the samurai gardens that you could walk around in. There's a koi pond. these were really beautiful gardens. So these are old, the homes of samurai, 300 or 400 years old. The families, for the most part, still live there, and you can, in some of them, you can go in and see it. Oh, I have a lot of sunset pictures I shouldn't have taken. You're in the land of the rising sun, Leo. Rising. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Line two, Carol, Northridge, California. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Thanks for hanging on.
I had Mozy as my cloud storage.
Okay.
Due to a variety of situations, they ended up completely crashing my computer.
Oh, dear.
To the point, brand new computer.
What?
It was totally lost. They fried the inside of my computer.
No, they didn't. They couldn't possibly have.
Oh, yeah. Due to some, yeah. Anyway, the bottom line is I'm no longer using Mozy. So I want to get a new cloud storage. Carbonite is, I need something very simple.
Yeah.
Is there something other, and Mozy, the one system I had with Mozy was very simple. I don't need complicated.
What does simple mean to you?
All right. I'm a person that says, number one, sit down. Turn the computer on by the button on the side. Number two. Okay.
So in other words, you want to install the software and then it just backs up and you don't have to think about it.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, Carbonite has a solution. It's a $60 a year solution for a single PC. You put it on there. It's basically identical to Mozy. But you know, and I should say Carbonite's a sponsor. There are other ways to do this. There's Backblaze is another company that a lot of people seem to like. I don't have any experience with it, so I can't tell you from personal experience. My sense is that Backblaze is not all that easy to use. It's the same price, though, $5 a month for a single computer, Mac or PC. Let me think of, you know, Mozy got kind of swallowed up by Dell, and they've kind of changed their business and so forth. I think I would try Carbonite. It's pretty easy to use. I can guarantee you it's not going to burn up your computer, although I don't think Mosey could either.
Oh, yeah. They came. There was just something totally simple I wanted them to do. So the tech came into the computer. You know, you'll allow them to come into the computer. And he started doing something. And all of a sudden, my entire screen went blank. And he and I said, you know what? There's nothing on the computer now. It's all gone. And all of a sudden, he hung up.
Okay.
Yeah. And then so I called my computer guy to go through it. And he said, your computer's fried.
Okay. Yeah. He can't do that remotely. And I don't even know if that was a Mosey guy. That doesn't sound like it was Mosey. But
I called Mosey because it was the I can't tell you if Mosey brings in text outside of the Mosey system. I have no idea. But the guy was talking me through the steps. And so he came in and did one thing after the next. And all of a sudden, my screen was totally gone. I heard terrible noises in the computer itself.
Yeah, they can't do that remotely. You can't do that with software. But anyway, your computer died.
So
Mosey didn't break your computer, but died. However, Carbonite or Backblaze, I think, would have very similar, you know, one button install. It's backing up automatically. I think either one of those would be just fine.
Okay.
I have experience with Carbonite, and I use it all the time, and it's very straightforward.
It's like $60?
$60 a year for a single computer. But try, you know, the other thing you can do is, and maybe this is easier for a lot of people, are you Mac or PC?
PC.
Take a look at Microsoft's OneDrive. Because what it does not do is back up your whole computer. That's what Carbonite, Mosey, and Backblaze specialize in. You know, you press a button and all your stuff's backed up. Not your applications and your operating system, but your data. OneDrive works a little differently. You have to designate the OneDrive folders, but it will then synchronize with Microsoft's cloud. And I don't think Microsoft is a problem in terms of reliability or support. I don't think they're going to burn up your computer. After all, they make the operating system. So take a look at Microsoft's OneDrive solution. That might be the easiest in terms of having it integrated into your system. They give you, I can't remember what they give you for free. It's a small amount. All these systems will give you, 5 gigabytes for free or something like that. But it's not very expensive. Apple users have a similar solution from Apple called iCloud. And if you really just want something that kind of just backs up your most important files, that's probably the easiest, least expensive way to go, and fairly automatic. I first of all applaud you that you're backing up. That's really important. And don't forget that even when you use a cloud backup service, that's nice, but you should have a local backup as well. Get an external hard drive and just, copy stuff over. The best way to do it is to get a program that will do it automatically for you. I've mentioned before from Centered Systems, a program called Second Copy. But there are other ways to automatically synchronize to an external drive. That's a nice solution as well. For instance, when your computer died, if you have a local backup, the fastest, easiest way to kind of get back up and running is to, when you get that new computer, is just to plug in the external drive that you've been backing up to and copy those files back. You'll be back up and running in half an hour. Mosey is $5.99 a month for 50 gigs. The chat room's telling me that Carbonite is now $72 a year. I noticed Backblaze is $5. It's roughly $60 a year. So they're all roughly in the same price range. But they're, they're limitations often because they don't want you backing up terabytes for that price. And you don't want to back up terabytes. The problem with online backup in general is it has to use your bandwidth. So, and they don't want to take over all of your upstream bandwidth, because then you wouldn't be able to download anything. So they're very gentle, which means slow. Means that if you have a ton of data, it's going to take a while to get it all backed up. And I think people forget that. It's not automatic. It's automatic, but it's not instant. You're always going to have the problem that, I've been backing up for a week and there's still more to go. Yeah, because it's using your internet. I would look at OneDrive. That might be the simplest solution for you. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. I'm just really glad that people are thinking about backup. This show, the theme of this show, two themes. One, because of the Twitter password thing, get a password manager and use it. Don't use the same password over and over. Use two-factor authentication. And back up. Those are probably, if I add one more thing, it would be make sure your computer's up to date. Keep it up to date. Actually, Windows 10. The spring update is now being pushed out to a lot of people. When you get those update requests, do them. Don't put them off, because those protect you against flaws that companies find in their operating systems and other software. So update, backup, password manager. Those are the things that's hygiene. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I thought Mosey was EMC and was acquired by Dell. Yeah, that's right. I do remember that now. Carbonite bought Mosey. So I don't think Mosey burned up your computer. I really don't. But something did. That's right. I forgot Carbonite bought Mosey. Yeah. Well, the magic music can tell us but one thing. I don't know what it is. I think Paul Simon's retiring. That's what it's... No, it's not telling us that. It's telling us it's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Chris is a professional photographer and a great teacher who's teaching people all the time how to get better pictures, not only in his workshops and his books and his podcast, Tips from the Top Floor, and every week right here. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Leo. And it's telling us that film is still around. Kodak is still around.
Kodachrome. Can you buy Kodachrome?
Kodachrome is not quite around.
Okay.
No.
Okay. But Kodak does make Tri-X still. I know, because I have some.
There's still Tri-X. There's still a whole bunch of film. I'm not here to talk about film this time. I want to talk about some apps on your smartphone that might be interesting or helpful for your photography.
I think nowadays photography for most people is smartphone photography.
Oh, it's moving there. Okay, very clearly. Yeah. Absolutely moving there. The big DSLRs and stuff. Only a few people use these now. The smartphones are getting so good. They have such amazing cameras in them, and they're just getting better and better. So
I was really debating on vacation whether to take my big Sony, and these aren't even as big as the DSLRs, but my Sony Alpha camera. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll take the little Leica because it's lighter and more portable. Then I thought, well, really, I've got a Pixel 2 and an iPhone 10. What do I need? Really, you do want to get lighter, don't you?
True. Yeah. And there are fewer and fewer reasons to keep those bigger cameras around. And I'm now making, and I still do shoot these dinosaurs because they have a few advantages. But again, you buy this for the price of carrying around a lot of weight and bulk.
Yeah.
And I make a point in mixing them now. So when I shoot something and I post them on a website, I add in iPhone photos here and there, and I don't tell people which those are, and people usually don't find out.
They never know. No, do they? They never know.
So here's a bunch of apps that I've been looking at and using. And the first one is a camera app. I think that's for iOS only. I'll get to some iOS and Android apps after that one. But the first one is one that I use every now and then. It's called Halide.
I love Halide. H-A-L-I-D-E.
It's a camera.
Oh, I love Halide.
It's a camera. It shoots RAW, which is kind of important if you want to do a lot of editing on those photos later. It is one of the fastest camera apps in terms of operating it. It's really quick. It has a manual focus, autofocus setting that you can just toggle easily without a lot of effort. There is a live histogram. Now, for those who come from the bigger cameras, that is an important thing to know how the exposure is and to know it really exactly. And you can have this live histogram there. It has focus peaking built in. So if you shoot a mirrorless camera, you might know this feature where it shows you in the photo when you do manual focus where that focus is in the photo by enhancing some of the edges of things where it's in focus. And there's one feature that I really like. You know when you want to take a photo of, let's say, a building straight on, but you're not really sure if the camera is all level? Now, the Halide doesn't have a level built in. It also taps you on the phone when your camera is level. Also, if you want to shoot, let's say, a document from top down, straight down on a table, and you want the camera to be absolutely level, then even there you get a little click that taps you and tells you that your stuff is in focus.
I really mostly for the iPhone 10 though, right? I mean, you can use it on all other iPhones, but
on iPhone 8.
But you're missing out.
I know.
A lot of the really cool features require the iPhone 10. This is a great app.
Doing the depth stuff and everything. It's a cool app. So unfortunately, you still can't make it a default system app. So if you want to swipe to your camera from the screen, you're still getting the default camera. I would love to be able to switch those out.
I keep it on my front page so I can get to it very quickly. It's really that good.
Another app that I use in low light when I want to shoot in low light is Cortex Camera. Cortex camera, and that is available for iOS and for Android, and it's an app, and it does some weird magic. So you press the shutter button, pointing it at something at night, where you normally get these grainy photos that don't have a lot of detail because the camera has to amp up its output, and it takes behind this scenes without you even knowing, it takes multiple frames, and then it does some magical math on it, and it processes these together, and it outputs a JPEG or TIFF. It has a self timer, so you can even put your phone on a little tripod thing, for example, and have it run on self timer. But it works handheld as well, and I've gotten some really good, very smooth looking, not really noisy, low light photos using Cortex camera.
Downloading it right now.
High recommendation. A third one is kind of not a camera, but an app that helps you do something to your photos. It's a very simple app. It came out a couple of years ago, I think, and it's called Layout from Instagram. That's its name.
Instagram. Yeah, yeah.
And it helps you to make a quick collage of several pictures, like 2, 3, 4. Sometimes you just want to have those in a little grid and make one single picture out of them. And that app makes it really easy. You choose the photos, and then based on the number of photos, it presents you with several layouts. You can swipe through them. You can tap to add some borders. You save it to your camera roll. That's it. That's all this app does. I think you can even slide the borders between images to change the size relation of different ones. But that's pretty much it. So kind of a one task app, but it's really good, and it does that really quickly.
Very nice. Very nice.
And the last one is, unfortunately, I think only on iOS. I'm pretty sure there are equivalents on Android. And it's called Street Graphy.
Street Graphy.
Street Graphy. It's a kind of a weird little camera app, and it's a simple shooting app. It has like one big button that you press. There is no viewfinder by default. You can enable a tiny little one, but it's only there to kind of give you a rough idea where you're pointing. So it gives you that element of surprise when you shoot. And I have really achieved some really interesting photos doing that, especially when you set its internal processing, because you can tell it to do a few things with your photo. For example, make it black and white, make it high contrast. So that's kind of the look that I would love to see when I shoot black and white film. And that camera kind of gives you a bit of that analog camera, film camera kind of thing. You press a button, you don't really have a good viewfinder. But you get pictures with really interesting framing, with a really gritty look that way. Again, I set this one to black and white and to high contrast. And then I usually just point and shoot. And in the end, I go through all these 50, 60, 100 pictures and pick the 10 out that I really like and delete the rest.
I kind of like, if you have the luxury of multiple cameras, I really like the idea of making one camera a black and white camera. And that's all it can do, right? And just set it that way. And it just helps you think in monochrome. And a lot of times that's a great way to think as you're taking pictures. Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that it doesn't have like a big viewfinder really gives you that element of surprise.
You don't know what you're going to get.
but that means you will probably get some really creative results that you wouldn't have gotten any other way.
Yeah, and you know, it's great. I mean, some of these cost money. Halide's not free. Cortex isn't free. But none of them more than a couple of bucks. And it's worth it. And you can have a whole toolbox on your smartphone and be ready for not anything, but many more things than you typically are. I think it's great. I like it.
Very true.
I really celebrate camera phone photography. I think it's getting better all the time. Now, you can find Chris at discoverthetopfloor.com. That's where you'll find all of his workshops. He does great workshops, podcasts, books, all of that. And we should mention that we're going to extend the photo assignment a little longer, right? We're looking for pictures of foot or feet. Can I say feet or just foot?
Oh, feet, foot, maybe the measurement.
We don't know. We don't know. We don't want to give you any constraints. Just take a picture illustrating the word or concept foot, upload it to Flickr, tag it with foot, put it in our photo guy, tech guy group. That way we'll have a chance to review it when, well, in a couple of weeks, I think. Probably we'll get back together with Chris and do that. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Leo.
DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll get back to the phones, answer more calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. Somebody was telling me Mosey was purchased by Carbonite at the beginning of the year. I forgot that a couple of months ago. So Mosey was part of EMC, which is a big storage company. And Dell bought EMC, and then Dell sold Mosey, their consumer offsite backup, to Carbonite earlier this year. So Mosey and Carbonite, I guess, are the same company. Probably similar features. 8888 Ask Leo, line 4, John in Los Angeles. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. It's great to talk to you. I've been such a long-term listener. I think you were a teenager when I started doing this.
No, you haven't been listening that long.
Yeah. Anyway, it's great to talk to you again.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Nice to talk to you again.
Two questions, if I can be brief, one more important than the other. The important one is I have Windows 10. I have an unusual, probably unique problem. It's a two-year-old Dell 3620 Precision. All I have to do is turn it on, and within 4 to 6 minutes, my router's speed drops from about 9 megabytes to less than 1. Happens every time without opening the browser, etc. Succinctly, I've had the router change, the Ethernet card change. Dell was fantastic. They sent a tech and changed my motherboard. That didn't work. I've done a Windows repair that worked for about 25 minutes. So Dell's telling me reinstall Windows. That's your best chance. There's a price to be paid. I have some tech, software that I'd have to pay to reinstall. I'm willing to do it, but I just want to know if any of your listeners heard of this problem or if you have a suggestion whether a Windows reinstallation, you know, might help. What do you think?
So your internet bandwidth goes down from, you said 9 megabits to 1 megabit. That doesn't sound right. Nine megabytes to 1 megabyte?
Yeah, right, exactly. And even my cell phone Wi-Fi through the router drops down.
So that's my question. So everything gets slower when this machine is on.
Precisely.
When this machine is off, does everything go back to normal?
Exactly, within a few seconds.
Okay. You said you replaced the router?
Yes.
To a new brand, or what did you? How did you whose router? Is it from the cable company?
From UVerse. They came up and replaced the router. Just doesn't seem to be a router problem, though.
Yeah, it sounds like, well, I mean, I'm trying to figure it out. It sounds like it's possible the machine itself, when you turn it on, is sucking all the bandwidth out of your house.
that's what seems to be the case.
Yeah, but correct. Can you monitor the bandwidth and see what's going on that Windows machine? Is that what's happening? And if it is, it may be doing something. It's also possible there's a config. I think you've actually gone down a lot of useless rabbit holes, first of all, unfortunately. It's nice of Dell to do all those things that it did, but none of them sound like they'd be related to this issue. So it sounds like when this machine is off, it's not on at all. Everything is as fast as it usually is.
Exactly.
The minute you turn on the
after it boots, 4 minutes to 5 minutes, my speed drops down every time. And I've been told it's a software problem, and I think they're probably right, but I can't figure out what it is.
You need to look at – so it depends on what your router's capabilities are. I would look at the – if your router has a log – I'm not a fan, as you probably know, of routers provided by the internet service providers. I generally ask the internet service provider, give me a UVerse won't do this, but give me a modem so I can convert the data coming in over whatever pipe you have, whatever wires you have, into Ethernet, and let me do the routing. Because then you can go out and buy a nice, usable, good router. Instead, they send you these combo devices that are both modems and routers. And often they're worse routers than you could get. You don't have much choice. You have to use the one router that UVerse provides. So that's unfortunate. I don't know what the capabilities of that router are, but if you can look at a router log or if it provides you with some information, most routers, you can see which devices are using what bandwidth. And that's what you need to do.
Right.
That's the diagnostic you need. You need to look at a real-time log of the router, and you'll see when your new Windows machine comes on, you should see, oh, all of a sudden it's... Now give me the numbers again, because they're not right. What is your U-verse bandwidth supposed to be?
Well, it started at 8, but I had...
8 what? 8 what?
8 megs.
No, that's not right. That's not right. That's not right. I don't know what... it should be 80 or 100 or 200 megabits.
Oh, no, I'm slower than that because my building has poor wiring. So I think I'm only about 8 or 9 megabits.
So you really are 8 megabits. Oy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. So you're getting U-verse DSL service, which is not ever as good as anything else. Do you have cable in your building?
No, I wish I did. It just seems to me if I could find a log in Windows that would say what starts up after 4 or 5 minutes, that would be helpful.
Windows 10?
Yeah.
Well, you do have...
the event viewer?
Yeah. You do have a data usage tool in Windows 10, which will allow you to monitor network usage. But you also can download something like Insider. Or are you on Wi-Fi on that machine, or is it directly connected?
Oh, I do both. I've tried both.
And it's the same. First of all, I mean, your biggest problem is you have hardly any bandwidth, period.
Right.
I mean, that's barely usable. It's funny because I remember how excited I was when I got 128 kilobits per second on an ISDN line.
Me too.
That was the biggest thing ever. But really, 8 megabits, you can't hardly do. You certainly can't. You know, you wouldn't want to stream Netflix on it. You can barely do anything. So I would. But what the router is the best if they give you that information. They may not. The router is the best source of that information because what it does, it sits there and it's logging what's going on. What's happening is your Windows machine is turning on and it's downloading something or it's updating something. And in all honesty, it's probably normal. It's probably doing its normal thing because it assumes you have more than 8 megabits. It may be uploading information. And you know, part of what happens when you have a slow connection like you do is it's possible to saturate the upload stream, which means downloads stop working. So first thing I would do is tell Windows 10 you're on a metered connection. Have you done that yet? Did Dell tell you to do that?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
Where would you do that? Do you know?
Yeah, you do it in the network settings. What that's telling Windows is don't assume I have a lot of unlimited bandwidth.
Okay.
In this day and age... it's a lot of, you know, they'll assume, oh, yeah, well, you can download Windows update in the background, you know, that the big Windows 1803 update. No problem. And it does that. It's going to suck up all your bandwidth. So you should turn that on. The easiest way to do it is just go into the control panel and search for metered, and you'll find the place you can do that setting. It's in a wired, it's different from wireless, but you want to turn it on in both cases. You have metered internet. That will tell Windows, be gentle. Be gentle. Don't, you know, stop messing with my stuff. Don't assume I have unlimited bandwidth. See if that helps. We'll put a link. PC Guy in the chat room is giving me a link to a How-To Geek article on how, when, and why to set a connection as metered on Windows 10. We'll put that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. That will help
question.
Yeah.
Password managers. I want to use it, but I don't remember most of my passwords that are embedded into Google Chrome. Will it automatically grab them for me, or
yes,
would I have to type it in?
Yeah, well, for sure LastPass, when you install it, says, oh, I see you have passwords stored in Firefox, Chrome, Internet Explorer. That's not a good place to store them, it says, and it's right. Let me import them. And then imports them, and then you should probably at that point, if you've ever used the same password on multiple locales, use that password manager to change all those passwords. LastPass and many others have an automated system that will automatically go through your passwords, look for security problems such as duplicated passwords, and offer to change them. It makes it pretty simple to fix that. It is a pain. You're going to go through, you know, some hours of futzing around in order to get this working, but it pays off in the long run.
Many thanks, Leo.
Hey, my pleasure. This is a puzzle on the bandwidth thing. I don't think it's the router. I don't think it's machine. I think it's Windows doing its normal thing, and you just have so little bandwidth that it's causing disruption. Metered might be all you need to do to fix it. Just make it a metered connection. Say, Windows, please, knock it off. But then monitoring your bandwidth usage, ideally at the router, if not there, then on the Windows machine, and seeing what's going on, seeing what's taking all that bandwidth. I don't honestly don't think it's a mistake. I think it's just you don't have a lot of bandwidth. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Love to hear from you. And if you want to visit the website I mentioned, I put a link up there to metered connections if you want to know that. Or anything we talk about, that's techguylabs.com. Top of the hour, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back. More of your calls right after this. Our show today brought to you by those great folks at 23andMe. I am, as you know, a happy customer of 23andMe. I did 23andMe when they first started some years ago. And what's great is that, you know, you spit into a little vial. There's enough DNA in that spit and that saliva for them to do their analysis. When I first started, you know, there was a basic genetic analysis. But over the years, they've added more and more reports, more and more information. And, you know, you do it once, and it's like the gift that keeps on giving. You keep learning more and more about yourself, the most fascinating subject in the world, you, and what your DNA means to you. Now, Mother's Day is coming up, and I know, you know, Mom probably likes flowers and candy, but would you maybe give her something a little different this year? I did actually for Christmas to my mom, and she loved it. The gift that proves how unique she is, the book she'll love to read, her DNA kit from 23andMe. What a great Mother's Day gift. She'll get 75 plus detailed online reports about everything from genetic ancestry, inherited traits. She can learn how her genes may influence her health. The ancestry reports include ancestry composition, the haplogroups, your Neanderthal. That's always a fun one. I'm 4% Neanderthal. Your DNA family, there's a great new relative finder tool that helps you find and connect with new relatives. All you have to do is just spit in a vial. Mom figured it all out. She did it. She's got her reports, and she says, I can't wait to talk to you about all the things I've learned. It's actually one of those things you want to get the whole family involved in. But now through May 13th, just for Mother's Day, you can get 20% off every kit and free gift wrap. You know what? Send it to Dad, too. Then you really know something. And get one for yourself if you haven't done it yet. 23 is 23andme.com/twit. 23andme.com/twit for 20% off for Mother's Day and free gift wrap. 23andme.com/twit. Doesn't say you have to give it to your mom. I think you could buy it for your mom and you and dad and sis and everybody in your family. Get 20% off every kit and free gift wrap. Now, that might say Happy Mother's Day on it. 23andme.com/twit. It's one of the most fun things, most interesting things I've ever done. I really love it. 23andme.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. You know the litany. Anything with a chip in it. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. Thanks so much to Rich DeMuro from KTLA in Los Angeles. He filled in for me last week, did a great job. I appreciate that, but I'm back, baby. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number if you want to ask a question or a comment or a suggestion. Make a suggestion, that's okay too. Website is techguylabs.com. This is an auspicious day. I remember back in the year was 1998, and May 11th, 1998, which is coming up in just a few days, we launched something called Tech TV. Actually, at the time, it was called ZD TV. They changed that. ZD TV. And I remember when we launched ZD TV, that Steve Jobs, right about then, had just come back to Apple and had famously drawn on a whiteboard at Apple. I don't know if we knew this at the time. Maybe this came out later. Apple at the time had a bunch of clones and, you know, hundreds of different models. He drew on the whiteboard a big plus sign, a big quadrant, four boxes. And he said, okay, in the columns, there's consumer and professional. And on the left, going down the side, there's desktop and portable. He said, we're going to have four products, one in each one of these. We're going to have a professional and consumer laptop, a professional and consumer desktop. And the consumer desktop, he said, we're going to call that the iMac. And it was on this day, 20 years ago, 1998, that Steve Jobs unveiled the iMac. That was quite a computer. May 6th, 1998. It was, at the time, it was fairly, radical, I guess is a good word for it. First of all, it was an all-in-one. That meant everything was in one box. And Steve very famously said, this box has to have a handle. It's too heavy to lift, but it's psychological. The Macintosh had a handle. The iMac has to have a handle. And poor Johnny Ive, who designed this first iMac, it was one of his first projects at Apple, had to go back to the drawing board and figure out a way to put a handle on this thing so you could lift this 20-pound computer. You never would. But Steve said, no, it's psychological. The idea that it's all in one, and you just lift it up by the handle. Keyboard, even the speakers, the CD drive. And, oh, it was radical in other ways, too. First of all, it was very colorful. Remember Bondi Blue? They called it Bondi Blue because they named it after the beach in Sydney, Australia. Very famous Bondi Beach that has very, very blue water. And he said, Bondi Blue. No one else is using this blue. I remember that because when we launched ZDTV, we decided on the set of our show, The Screensavers, to have 20 other consumer electronics products, including vacuum cleaners, in Bondi Blue. Apparently, it wasn't that unique a color. But, hey, Steve was a good salesman. I believed him. It was radical in other ways. It lacked something that every computer up to then absolutely had. It was a requirement. A floppy disk drive. Nope. They replaced it with USB and said, look, this is the wave of the future. You don't need a floppy disk drive. You need a CD-ROM drive. And you need USB. The first system, just to give you an idea, remember this is 20 years ago. The first system wasn't an Intel processor. Apple hadn't switched yet. It was still a PowerPC processor running at a whopping 233 megahertz. That seemed like a lot at the time. The hard drive, oh, it was big. 4 gigabytes. 4 gigabytes. Not terabytes. Gigabytes. And if you wanted the base unit in Bondi Blue with the 4 gig hard drive, and I'm trying to remember how much RAM. I don't. It was four megs of RAM. Probably was, not gigs. $1,299. They unveiled it today, but it wouldn't ship until August of that year. I do remember though getting that first iMac, and how much fun it was to take that out of the box, and all you had to do was you plugged in the power, plugged in the keyboard, the world's worst mouse. Remember that hockey puck mouse that the first Mac, the iMac came with? Completely useless mouse. But you plug the mouse, the keyboard, and the power, and that's it. You're done. It's ready. You press the button and bong. I wonder if I can find video of Steve introducing this. I bet I can. This is the iMac, he said. He doesn't use the. No article needed. This is iMac. The whole thing is translucent. Yep, you can see into it. It's so cool, says Mr. Jobs. We've got stereo speakers on the front. We've got infrared right up here. That didn't turn out to be a big selling point. We've got the CD-ROM drive right in the middle. We've got dual stereo headphone jacks. No, they had one. Do they have two? We've got the coolest mouse on the planet right here. All of the connectors are inside one beautiful little door here. The Ethernet, the USB stuff. Around the back, we've got a really great handle here. Did you ever lift one of those? The back of this thing, says Steve Jobs, looks better than the front of the other guys, by the way. Oh, classic Steve. Classic Steve. 15-inch display, 1024 by 768. Two USB ports, 4 gig hard drive. Oh, I was wrong. 32 megs of RAM. And that was a lot for those days. 32 megs all the way up to 128 megs. Not gigs. Remember, this is 20 years ago. We didn't have gigs. We couldn't afford gigs in those days. We had megs, and we were happy. 128 megs, 24X CD-ROM drive. Built-in stereo speakers with surround sound. And it was Mac OS 8.1. I will find somewhere where Steve's talking about that thing. It was radical. It was radical. And the lack of the floppy was certainly a big deal, but just the color. It was the first friendly-looking PC. You wanted to use it. It looked so cool. How you feel about it probably depends a little bit about how nostalgic you are about Macs and how you feel about Steve Jobs. And, you know, Apple's come a long way since then. By the way, Apple had a very good quarter. Everybody was worried that the iPhone 10. In fact, I tell you what, I'm not going to report on rumors anymore. In fact, financial reporting has become a real problem covering tech because there are people out there who want the stock price to go down. And we were seeing stories galore about the iPhone 10 is underperforming. It's not selling. It was the best-selling smartphone of Q1. Apple made a lot of money on the iPhone 10. None of that was true. And I don't know where the rumors came, but I have to think it had something to do with people who wanted to short Apple stock. At this point, it probably is a mistake to short Apple stock. They had a very good quarter. Did very well, made more money on what they call services, which includes App Store sales and Apple Music and iCloud, more money on services than on the Macintosh and the iPad combined. So it's iPhone, big, big, big revenue driver, then services, then iPad and Macintosh. You know where the future lies for Apple. Phone and services. 20 years later, 8888 Ask Leo. We can talk about that or anything else on your mind. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little tiny time out. Come back. I want your calls. We're going to talk high tech. 8888 Ask Leo right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the 20th anniversary of the Macintosh, and this is how Steve Jobs announced it on May 6th, 1998.
This is iMac. The whole thing is translucent. You can see into it. It's so cool. We've got stereo speakers on the front. We've got infrared right up here. We've got the CD-ROM drive right in the middle. We've got dual stereo headphone jacks. We got the coolest mouse on the planet right here.
Unusable, but cool.
Come on around. All of the connectors are inside one beautiful little door here, the Ethernet, the USB stuff. Around the back, we've got a really great handle here. The back of this thing looks better than the front of the other guys, by the way. And then around the side. So let's take one more swing around it so you can see. This is what it looks like. And again,
he was so proud
of
this.
Things in person.
And remember, you have to understand that Steve Jobs is coming back after being fired by John Sculley and the Apple board, set out to pasture. He couldn't run the company, they said. They practically ran into the ground. What we didn't know at the time was Apple, at about this time, was almost out of money. They had a few weeks' worth of runway. They were almost bankrupt when Steve Jobs came back. He got Microsoft, of all people, Bill Gates, to give him $150 million. Microsoft wanted to do that because Otherwise, without Apple, they're a monopoly, and they're worried about regulation. This is at the same time, remember, the Department of Justice was about ready to sue Microsoft for being a monopoly and using their monopoly power. So Bill Gates said, Steve, here, have $150 million. Please don't go bankrupt. Steve took this company that was about to go under. He'd founded it years before, made it the premier computer company in the world, personal computer company in the world, was fired, started another company, a couple of companies, bought a company, a little company called Pixar, turned that into something, started a computer company called Next. That didn't go anywhere, but when he came back, he brought an important part of Next back with him, the Next operating system, which became OS X. You're still using it if you use a Macintosh, the Next Step operating system. It's the underlying key component of all Macintosh computers. And he takes his company almost about out of business and makes it today, 20 years later, the most valuable company in history. And, yeah, a little bit profitable. And, yeah, they could lend $150 million to Microsoft about this time. The worm has turned. No worm in this apple. 20 years later, it's really interesting to watch. And Mac, of course, is the premier computer line for Apple still. Although I wonder, many do. Tim Cook, the current CEO of Apple, who replaced Steve when Steve passed away at an untimely young age. Tim Cook has said, we still believe in Macintosh. We love the Macintosh. We know you love the Macintosh. We're going to keep making Macintoshes. We're not merging Macintosh with iOS. But I have to wonder what their commitment is to Macintosh. The last few Macs have not been impressive. And it's been 3 years since a Mac Pro, a professional-grade Macintosh, hasn't been updated in 3 years. They say maybe next year they put out the iMac Pro. iMac Pro, which costs more than twice as much as the original iMac, is a very nice machine. I have one. I love it. But there hasn't been a lot of innovation in the Macintosh line from Apple in some time. So I hope they keep this going. 20 years down the road. 20 years for iMac. That's nice. 8888 Ask Leo to the phones. We go Mike, Reno, Nevada. Hey, Mike.
Leo, hi, this is Mike Antonucci, ex-Mercury News and a longtime fan.
Oh, Mike, I know you well. What are you up to these days?
I'm trying retirement, Leo. I'm
retirement? Mike, we need you back at the Merck.
You know, I left the Merck in 2008, and I spent the next 9 years at Stanford, and you gave me a good chuckle not long ago on Twit when you were wondering who that Hennessy was who was chairing Alphabet. That's John Hennessy, ex-Stanford president, computer scientist in his own right.
Well, there, you know, that's actually, now that I know that, I'm impressed. Mike, do you remember in 1998? You must have been at that event when Steve Jobs.
I wasn't doing tech then. I have some vivid memories of other Jobs and Apple press events, but not that.
Yeah, you know, I think, if I look back at doing this 30 years, maybe 40, the highlights were always those special keynotes that Steve gave. And you entered it, and you could, I mean, even watching back this one 20 years ago, you really entered into a reality distortion field, but you did so willingly. He was such a great salesman. You just believed. You just said, yeah, who needs a floppy disk? Who needs one?
They were better than sporting events, Leo.
They really were. They were something. So what can I do for you, Mike?
So, listen, recently you were talking about establishing your own domain name. You were talking about then you own it forever. But here's something that I ran into. Twice I registered a domain name with registry companies. Not my personal name, but, same name I thought was clever.
Yeah.
And what I ran into was I did not know that these registry companies have such notoriously ugly reputations for billing practices and consumer relations. And each time I canceled, the company I was registered with claimed they owned my name.
Oh,
and
man.
Try to sell it.
Well, tell me who these companies were. That sucks.
So that was register.com, and then it was GoDaddy.
Wow. They don't own your name. You own your name, and that's inappropriate. And, you know, all these companies, so it's an interesting kind of hierarchy. I'm sure you know this. But all of this comes from an extra governmental agency called ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Nobody runs it. It used to be the U.S. Department of Commerce. It isn't really anymore. It was founded by a professor at USC many years ago who basically, on his own, assigned names and IP addresses for many, many years. John Postel. It's a little bigger than that now. But so they are the company in charge of these domain names, everything from .com, .us, .net, .gov. They're in charge of that. Then they almost franchise out to these companies, these registrars, the ability to set up a name. But ultimately, that name goes back to ICANN. ICANN, if you, for instance, have a dispute with these companies, ICANN is the company that mediates it. Oh, shoot, we have to take a break. Hold on a second, Mike, and I'll help you some more.
Will do.
You own that name. You should own that name. And if you have a problem, you should go to ICANN. That's the kind of the
bottom line.
Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So register.com is, as far as I know, okay. So is GoDaddy, but maybe you should try somebody I like better. All of my domains are registered with hover.com.
Well, but I'm paying them, right? I was paying them, right, to keep this name registered. So once I cancel the payment, No.
Ah, now I see what happened. Yeah, well, as soon as you stop paying, the name goes back after a waiting period, I think a 90-day waiting period, into the pool.
Well, what they were trying to do was sell it during those 90 days.
Yeah, because they figure, oh, he's letting it go. Maybe somebody else wants the nooch.com. And and so they, you know, you don't technically own it. Now, usually there is a grace period, then if you re-register it, they'll give it back to you. Did you get that?
Well, I didn't want it after the way I got treated by them. I mean, we don't need to go into specifics of what they did. So I was wondering if there's a way to circumvent these companies.
There's not.
Directly with ICANN?
No. ICANN does not do that. So you just have to find a reputable company. Yeah, I always, you know, this is anecdotal, but I've seen it happen. I've always been in the impression there are companies, and GoDaddy's one of them, where if you go and you search for a domain name, they will then immediately register it and then offer to sell it to you.
Yeah.
These are not, strictly speaking, illegal practices, but they're shady as hell, and I don't think they ought to be allowed, and I don't trust a company that does that. And they're a lot – we've seen this again and again, these registrars, they're not well regulated. ICANN is not doing as good a job,
right,
perhaps as it should to regulate them. So it's up to you, I guess, to find a good domain name. But do keep paying for it, because you don't own it. The minute you stop paying for it, it lapses. It's like a post office box. You know, they're going to reuse that. If you stop paying for it, they're going to reuse that.
Right. Okay.
Try Google. Google has a domain name service that's I hear very good, and because they're Google, they have a higher interest in not getting a bad reputation for shenanigans. I doubt very much you'd ever see any shenanigans from Google.
All right.
Google Domains is the name of that one.
Okay.
Hey, it's great to hear from you, Mike.
Yeah. Before I go, can I throw a quick suggestion at you?
Yes.
I can't pick up an Apple device these days. My MacBook Air, my phone, use a Apple iOS or any system without it hitting a bug.
Lately. Oh, I know. They're terrible. And, no, you're right.
Well, so I'd love to have some iOS Today shows that were bug-centric.
Deal. I'll tell Megan we will do bugs. There, you know, the iOS 11 was just a nightmare for a long time.
Yep.
And I've inveighed against them over and over again. Not that it does any good, but the problem with Apple is that the people who love Apple love it with blindly often, and so you'll hear them. And I don't blame them for loving Apple. I mean, there's lots of reasons to love Apple, but you'll hear them say, "Oh, it's no worse than anybody else," or "Always, you know, they fix it. It'll be fine. You can." But then there's people like Steve Gibson who just went off on iOS 11. He says, "Unusable." Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
I got a promise from you. A buck-centric show.
Deal. I'm telling Megan. Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
There's a great name. And computers have been around since before the Mac, even. Way back when. The Epson. Remember those Epson dot matrix printers? Hard to believe iMac is 20 years old. 20 years. Not the Macintosh itself, because there were Macs before, but the iMac, 20 years old. So I talked a little more with Mike off the air. He's having trouble with his domain names. The way it's complicated. The way it works, it's essentially a phone book, domain names. It's a phone book. Because when a computer goes out on the internet, it doesn't actually need a domain name. It needs something called an IP address, an internet protocol address. You've seen them. They're the four numbers separated by periods. We call it a dotted quad. You know, like 10.1.10.1 or 192.168.2.1. You've seen those, right? Well, if you go to a site, you're not really going to yahoo.com or twitter.com. You're going to a number. And in order for the computer and the router to find that number, it starts, you give it a name, it does a lookup. It's like it looks it up in a phone book, in effect. Same way you'd look up, you know, Leo Laporte in the phone book and you'd find the phone number. And just like a phone number, every internet address has to be unique. So that once you get that address, that's the computer you're going to. That's the one. That's it. There's no one else using that number. So somebody has to manage this phone book. And in the early days, it was just this guy, John Postel, at the University of Southern California. You know, I imagine him in just a little office with a big chalkboard on the wall, and he would just say, oh, yeah, okay, you want Leo.com. All right, let me just write that down, put it in a book, and that'd be, and here's your number. It's, and that'd be that. And then there's a system called DNS. That's the lookup system, domain name system. That's the lookup system in the phone book. And it's all, of course, automated nowadays. But you give it the name and it looks up the number. And the DNS is actually a fascinating, complicated service that runs surprisingly well, given that it's pretty much held together with chewing gum and bubble wrap. There are domain name servers, what they call the canonical domain name servers. And there's really only 13 of those all over the world. They're the big phone books. And then there are people who run domain name servers all over the world. Your ISP, your internet service provider, is one of them. They have their DNS server. Generally, that's the one you use. And if you, for instance, enter in a brand new domain name that no one's ever entered in before, you'll type it in, your computer will say, oh, I don't know where that is. I don't have it in my memory. Let me go ask the internet service provider, hey, do you know where fraptuousdecalucale.com is? And the internet service provider said, let me look it up. Nope, not in my phone book. And then it goes upstream. It goes to, ultimately, to those 13 servers, and one of them will know, and then say back, and then the internet service provider will say, oh, thanks. Now I know from now on, fraptuousdecalucale.com is 196.143.1.2, and I'll keep that in my phone book, and next time somebody asks, I won't bother you. So that's kind of how it works. It trickles down from those canonical servers at the top. When you want a domain name, you go to a registrar. This is a company that ICANN, remember the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. That's the successor to John Postel's little informal service that he ran. ICANN, which runs those big canonical name servers, then allows other companies, franchisees in effect, to sell domain names. When you buy a domain name from a registrar, the registrar keeps track of it, but then has to send that record up to ICANN so ICANN can put it in the phone book. And then over a period, sometimes of hours, sometimes longer, it will trickle down through the system. And when you probably had this experience, if you ever had your own domain name, when you first set it up, people don't recognize it until it's all trickled down through all the servers, and then everybody can get to it. That's how it works. ICANN is the company that decides what the dot XYZs can be. You know, they started with .com, .net, .gov, .mil, and they've added many more since then. They determined that. Registrars can sell, you know, those names. They set the price. That's why it's worth shopping around. And they, frankly, set the service standards. Some are better than others. Hover, which is what was one of our sponsors for a long time, is the one I prefer, HOVER.com. They seem to play fewer games than anybody else. It's not a great business to be a domain registrar. Typically, you're charging $10 a year. Some portion of that goes to ICANN. So that means you make a few bucks a year per name. You can either make it up in volume or, as most often they do, upsell people. Try to get more money by selling them other services. And that's why some of these companies, it'll take you five pages of clicking no to get to your domain name just because they want to sell you a bunch of other stuff, upsell you hosting services, email services, domain privacy services, and on and on and on. Because there's not a lot of money in this business, frankly. And maybe because there's not a lot of money, it also attracts scammers and people who play games trying to make more money out of it. So they don't seem to be all that well regulated. If you have a problem, you can go to ICANN. But ICANN isn't very well funded and, is extra governmental now. So nobody's really paying attention. And, you know, while the people who run the ICANN board are very good, serious computer scientists, you know, it's given the importance of the internet, it isn't exactly, it's not exactly IBM. So somebody else mentioned Google now offers domains. And I think domains.google is the Google domain registrar. I would bet that Google does a good job with that. They have other ways of making money. They charge $12 a year for domains, and I would bet they don't do a lot of upselling and so forth. So Hover's the one I am registered with. I used Dotster for a long time. They were very good. GoDaddy I've never been very fond of, mostly because I just didn't like their sexist ads, and the guy who used to run it was kind of a creep. That's changed, so I think GoDaddy's probably fine. But Google domains, domains.google. Not every registrar can register every domain, by the way. So if you want .ninja, you've got to go to a company that sells .ninja. It's a legitimate domain, but it's not necessarily available from every seller. Some of the most popular domains, like .ly, are owned by countries. .ly is Libya. So the country Libya makes a little money on the side selling .ly domain names. .tv is the small island nation of Tuvalu. So if you want .tv, you've got to go to the Tuvalu registrar and get it from them. Yeah, you can't get leo.ninja from everybody. it's a complicated system. It doesn't work all that well. But mainly, and I told Mike this, you can't let it lapse because at that point, it's like a post office box. You only own that address until you stop paying for it. At that point, they can do anything they want with it. And often what they do ends up costing you money. So keep your bills paid when it comes to your domains. 8888 Ask Leo. We got another segment to come before the show is over. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I wonder if anybody knows what that sound is. Does that sound familiar? That's Pong! Somebody sent me a video clip with Pong on it. 8888 Ask Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wrapping things up for this weekend with Line 3, Bill in Rainbow City, Alabama. Hello, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. Welcome.
Hell's long. Microsoft might have fixed my problem. I don't know. But for the last month, I keep getting this flash window that says I need to update flash drive.
Yeah.
Then the Defender says it's got Trojans or something in it, and it comes up with a message that says Windows Defender and the virus found a Trojan JS flash ISI.D flash player, and it says, please restart. Well, I've restarted, and then I just run a where you can find all the complete run on the disk, and I thought that handled it, but it's come back about three times on two different computers. And it was in my message, but since I've been on hold, the message has gone away, and it's saying your device is being protected. The latest threat scan was 5.2.218. Latest threat definition update was 5.6. Latest health scan is 5.6. So I don't know if that thing's gone away or not, but
yeah.
It's gone up three
so
times.
So let me talk about what happened, first of all. Flash, which, you know, you go, oh, I know Flash. I use Adobe Flash. A lot of sites use Adobe Flash. But unfortunately, it's one of many ways scammers can get stuff on your system. In order for a bad guy to get on your system, there's really only two ways malware can get on your system. One is they trick you into running an installer. They trick you into running it. The other way is they take advantage of a bug or flaw, of which there are many, in your computer, in your software, in your operating system, and they get in without your help. So that's why we say you got to keep your system up to date, because then they can't get in by accident. But so that doesn't mean they aren't going to try to get in. And one of the ways they try to get in is you go to a website. Maybe the website itself wasn't updated, and it's been compromised. Bad guys get something on the website. That's often the case. And on that website, you didn't even know it. Maybe you had the browser open in the background, whatever. They put code that would pop up a window. Looks like a real window on Microsoft, on your Windows machine, that says, oh, you need to update your Flash. Except it's not from Adobe, and it's not Flash that's going to get updated. They're trying to trick you into clicking that OK button, downloading software, and running the installer and running it. And you know what it does? It doesn't install Flash. It installs a Trojan horse, or malware, in other words. They call it a Trojan horse because, remember the story of the Trojan horse, the way that they got into the city of Troy is they put a gift horse outside that turned out to be full of soldiers. And the people in Troy said, oh, look, somebody made a giant wooden horse for us. Let's roll it inside the city. Well, oh, look, somebody's offering me a flash update. Let's just bring it inside the computer and run it. And instead of being flash inside, there's malware. So you got malware on your system. So the thing to be very, very, very careful about, first of all, again, keeping your system up to date, and then being very careful about running programs, especially if you didn't go out and get it. If it put a pop-up on your screen that said, download this, stop. If you think, well, maybe it's reasonable, I do need to update my Flash, it's been a while, then go to Adobe.com and download Flash directly from them. Don't get it. Don't accept files from strangers. So, now the good news is Windows knew all about this malware because it's very common. New malware generally can sneak by. The old stuff is hard to get by because it's been around for a while and all the antiviruses know about it. So, Windows Defender or Windows Microsoft's malware scanner, which you have on your system, one or the other detected it. Sounds like it was having trouble removing it. That's not unusual because the guys who get this stuff on your system, they tricked you. They're not going to back out easily, so they make it hard as can be to get off your system. If you don't see that pop up anymore, Bill, you know, Microsoft, it sounds like the Defender updated and maybe it got rid of it. Then you're golden. Just be careful from now on. Don't believe those pop ups. They're often scams. However, if it didn't get rid of it and you still see the pop-up, then you got a bigger problem. It's hard to get rid of viruses because they don't want to give up easily, and they may even install stuff that doesn't that isn't visible that Microsoft's malware scanner or Defender don't see, that other antiviruses don't see, and you may think you're clean and you're not. So really, when you get malware like that, I mean, you can Google advice, but the problem is malware authors often put advice up on the internet and Google finds it and gives you exactly the wrong advice. Like, instead of fixing it, it makes it worse. Generally, I tell people just reinstall Windows when that happens. Let's hope. I'm hoping, Bill, you don't have to reinstall Windows, that you're okay. This is in general. I have to say, I just really think that people are buying into a lot of trouble when they buy full systems, full operating systems like Windows and Macintosh. It's just, you have to become a security expert. And it's pretty clear Bill is just a sitting duck waiting. He's going to get bit again, I can promise you, because you just want to use the darn thing, right? You don't want to become a security expert. Go out and get yourself a Chromebook or a tablet, maybe an iPad. You're not going to get these viruses. You're not going to get these same problems because it's not a general purpose operating system. It's basically, you know, a simple, simple operating system that only does a few things. In the case of the iPad, Apple keeps malware off of it. In the case of a Chromebook, it's just a browser. It's a lot harder to get malware on there. And if you do, you can reinstall it much more easily than reinstalling Windows. People should be using these simpler devices. They'll be much more secure. If not, then, well, now you got the burden of having to become a security expert. And it is a burden. It's hard to do. You kind of have to be a computer expert to do it. Let's see if I can get one more call in here. Kevin in Malibu. Hi, Kevin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Tokyo.
I had so much fun. Oh, it's great.
That's a fantastic country.
Isn't it? It's amazing. Anyway, I only got a minute, so what can I do
I know
for
what you?
You
do. Leo, I'm calling about Superfetch on my Windows 10 laptop.
Oh.
It's the disk is running really slow, 100% usage according to Task Manager, and nothing's going on. My internet search, Google is my friend, kind of said Superfetch is the culprit. Do you know anything about that? And is there a system penalty in stopping Superfetch?
Yeah, Superfetch is a memory manager that is supposed to improve performance. Started with Vista. There are articles you can read about it.
I read a bunch, and I'm calling.
Yeah.
I still don't know.
Yeah. You can disable it if you want to. I would take a look at disabling it if it's. I don't have time to go on and on about it, but try disabling it. Leo, you can do it in the services app. Leo Laporte, Deep Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Most people don't have trouble with it. Sometimes people do. So if you look in the, you go into the services app.
Right.
And
YouTube shows everything. There's like half a dozen videos. I'm wondering if there's a system penalty by doing that. It seemed like a great idea, Superfetch, but it's just not.
Yeah. I guess the answer is if you're not having problems, no, leave it on. But if you are, disable it. It's not going to break anything. It's there to speed things up. Obviously, if it's not, turn it off.
It's slowing things down.
How much RAM do you have?
4 gigs.
Yeah, that's probably part of the problem.
I can fully see when I open up Task Manager there, it's like, turn on the machine, 100% usage for at least 10-15 minutes. It's like, and the number one user is Superfetch.
Yeah. It's what it does is it preloads stuff that you need into memory.
Right. That's a great idea.
It will be busy at first and then not busy later. I would turn it off and see if it feels slower to you. If it doesn't, leave it off. It's harmless to turn it off.
Yeah.
The only thing
tired
that
tired from your trip?
No. Actually, I feel pretty good. I should be. I just got back yesterday. I should be horribly jet lagged. But I feel
did
pretty good.
You go to the Roppongi district while you were out there?
I didn't get. You know, we'd spent too little time in Tokyo. I really. We're going back. It is an amazing.
Absolutely.
Amazing country.
Did you go up in the tower? They're like the Eiffel Tower.
No, the TV, the new TV tower. I know.
You go back.
I know.
Go up there. You see the whole, the country, the world, which is like 10 New Yorks in that small little area. It's unbelievable.
It was incredible. I wish we'd had more time in Tokyo. We only had a day and a half.
We had a whole show to talk about it.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing that both Lisa and I were convinced as we flew away, sadly, is we will be back, and I think more likely than not, we'll just spend 2 weeks in Tokyo. It was incredible. I was glad we saw what we saw. We saw a lot of the countryside, but
took the bullet train.
Yep, that was fun. And what a beautiful culture! It's just an amazing culture. I mean,
beautiful, people,
fascinating.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
you did have to learn how to use the restroom again in a little different.
I bought a bunch of hankies. Oh well, we already have Japanese toilets at home, so I knew that part. Hey, it's nice to talk to you.
Greatest.
All right, have a good one.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.